It's Giles Brown. Beyond Happy, how to rethink happiness and find fulfillment is a comprehensive guide to cultivating well-being, combining cutting-edge science and primordial folk wisdom. It's an interesting, a heady mix for a Monday. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by the man with a huge smile on his face this morning, Mark Fabian, author of Beyond Happy. Morning to you, Mark.
Morning. Thanks for having me on the show.
And obviously the first question is, how are you feeling today?
I'm doing really well. The weather in London is smashing. Really puts a smile on my dial.
Yeah, because this is the main thing, because obviously climate has an awful lot to do with being happy. Now, this isn't one of these sort of woolly get your wind chimes in order and make sure your dream catches are polished in the morning, is it? Explain the thesis or the genesis of the idea behind Beyond Happy.
It's a great question. Thanks for asking. So the book is, not about wellness, I guess, and it's not the sort of thing you'd find on TikTok necessarily. So it's a book I wanted when I was 18. I was depressed. I went to the bookstore looking for answers. I did find some, but they were kind of all over the place. Bit of mood management here, bit of nihilism there, mental health, community, all the rest of it. I've tried to put that into one place. So it's basically about trying to think about well-being as your life fitting together in a coherent way. And happiness is a big part of that. But you also want to be thinking a lot about your relationships, the kind of values that you're living out in your life, and this sort of stuff.
Because you've studied this at university. I mean, you've done various postgraduate degrees, etc. with this. I mean, is there a formula? Is there a benchmark for happiness? Is it an X over Y plus Z at a little bit of stardust? I mean, how do you actually sort of measure? Because happiness surely is a subjective thing. What might make me happy might make you sort of meh, as the kids say.
It's a great question, Giles, but a very complicated one, so I hope you don't mind if I give you a slightly longer answer.
Go ahead, off we go.
So I do study this at university. It's my profession. I look at it from different perspectives, psychology, philosophy, economics, all over the place. Some of my colleagues, especially in economics, they would say that there's a formula. They would say that we can measure people's life satisfaction. We ask them, how satisfied are you with your life on a scale from 0 to 10? And then we do some statistical analysis of what correlates with that, what causes higher numbers on that scale. I have some work on how I don't think we can really trust a lot of the data coming out of that sort of life satisfaction, but we have learned a lot from that sort of research. The other types of research that we get, especially out of psychology, is we just ask people a wider range of questions about things that we think matter to their well-being. So we ask them how autonomous they're feeling, whether they feel competent in their life, whether they feel loved and cared for, whether they've got love, these kind of questions. And again, we can explore the relationship between those sorts of things and whether people are in better moods, whether people feel they have meaning and purpose, whether people feel more themselves, like whether they feel more authentic, these kind of things. And then out of philosophy, we also get a lot more interest in the ethical side of well-being. So I would say that a big part of being happy and well in your life is that you feel like you're making a contribution, either in your community or you're doing something that is worthwhile. And that's something that the philosophers think about a lot.
Let's get rid of one of the old hoary ones, because we live in an age where we are constantly being told the next bright, shiny thing. And social media's got an awful lot to answer for this one, Mark, but the next bright shiny thing will reach us to that Nirvana-like plane where everything is a big pink fluffy cloud, and we shall sort of run hand in hand with our partners in white floaty dresses through a field of tulips. However, this is
lovely.
Yeah, well, that's my personal thing anyway. And then there's obviously some dramatic music in the background. Are we being enticed, seduced, and otherwise pushed towards that which we can never retain, and therefore we're on a happiness treadmill, and it's always just out of reach?
Yeah, so this is kind of how the book starts, that you are wired to always be, like, to not be able to sustain your good moods in the same way that you can't really sustain your bad moods. Like, it takes a lot to make someone chronically depressed. If your doctor's appointment is running late, you might get a bit irritated, but a few hours later, you'll be over it. The same sort of story is with your happiness. So if you're kind of trying to constantly be ecstatic, always having that feeling that you have when you're high at a party or something, then that's not going to work for you. So we need to try to set up the conditions in our life that our life keeps generating pleasant, fulfilling and valuable experiences. And a lot of the book is about how to do that. And I think here A lot of it is that primordial folk wisdom that you generously mentioned in your introduction. So I don't think that happiness and well-being is just over the next material or technological horizon, because humans have been able to be happy and well since time immemorial, and we want to excavate some of that wisdom that we've accrued over a long time.
But here's the thing, because of the human experience, is it not unnatural or perhaps unrealistic to think that you were always going to be on a permanent high of happiness? I mean, again, I'll go back to, you know, I'm living in the south of Spain. The weather is absolutely gorgeous. I am bombarded. There's an awful lot of real estate gets sold down here, okay? And there's an awful lot of Lamborghinis and Porsches and beautiful houses. And I am forever being bombarded with, hi, guys, you know, by some sort of blonde lady going, hi, guys, here's lovely Marbella and everything. And everybody's walking around and they're happy. And you know, I mean, obviously being, you know, being a sort of dark and what twisted person I am, I just go, oh, for goodness sake. Is it not part of the human experience that we have to enjoy the highs but also prepare for the lows, and that makes the happiness when it comes again, because life is a bell curve, that we will not always be happy, and to be permanently happy is either something chemically enhanced or just not good for us?
Yeah, I think I broadly agree with that take. So as I said, you're sort of neurochemically wired to come back to a baseline in terms of your mood, and also to be a little bit dissatisfied with your life, which is why it's so easy for people to sell you stuff saying that, well, if you just had this Lamborghini, you'd be happy, and then you get it. If you just had this private jet, you'd be happy. And I think it's broadly the case that those things aren't going to make you happy. What's going to make you happy for the most part is your relationships, your values, knowing who you are and being able to pursue that sort of stuff. And I think it's worth reminding ourselves of the primordial wisdom of teachings like Buddhism and Christianity in some ways, about gratitude, about trying to get off this hedonic treadmill, managing our desires, focusing on what's already good in our life, and just investing more in that.
Because it's not a one-size-fits-all formula here, happiness, because what might make me happy might not be the same thing. I mean, I got out of bed this morning, put, you know, the right color socks on, and that makes me happy, and I had a, you know, damn good cup of coffee, and that sets my template for the day, because, you know, I've been through some interesting situations in my life, and so that makes me happy. And the fact that I can come down and drive to work and do a job and go to a home full of people who love me, that makes me happy. Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody who is a captain of industry might think, oh, for goodness sake, I woke up this morning and, you know, the stock market is going, you know, is diving quicker than a bleeding Stuka at the moment. So it's you surely, for your own personal happiness, you set your own personal goals, and so my happiness, what I regard to makes me happy, is not the same as another person's happiness, and we have to recognize that.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the first part of the book, especially the first chapter, is all about turning inwards and learning to listen to your own advice. So turning off the influences, turning off the stock market, turning off all that sort of noise, and developing a better dialogue with yourself, especially with your emotions and your intuitions and these kind of things, and learning how to unpack the messages that you're getting there. And then chapter 4, and to a lesser extent, chapter 5, is all about self-actualization. So it's kind of guidebook to how you can think about the kind of person that you'd be proud to be, think about the kind of person you feel a responsibility to be, and then how to set about bringing yourself into alignment with that by trying on certain identities, thinking about what sort of feedback you get from them. How do you feel when you're behaving that way? And then you can make recalibrations on the basis of those sorts of feelings.
You mentioned something at the beginning, which I thought was really interesting, which is about, you know, bringing things into your community and isolation, both physical and you can be isolated in a room full of people, but putting stuff into your community and being involved, being a part, we do perhaps live in a world where we are convinced that, you know, the strong silent type or the enigmatic Garbo-esque figure is something to attain to. But actually, in reality, your happiness is a feeling of self-worth, and you get that from being involved and not being isolated.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Humans are a social animal. I think it's also worth mentioning that in sort of evolutionary environments, when we are isolated and alone, we're basically dead. It's very quick for a cheetah to knock us out from behind the bushes or whatever. Whereas when we are in a group with other humans, with or without spears, we're basically an apex predator and no one can mess with us. So as a result of this kind of evolutionary environment and the fact that our main advantage as a species is that we are capable of very sophisticated cooperation, we have developed these basic psychological needs for feeling loved and cared for feeling like we belong to a community. That's a lot of where our self-esteem comes from. That's where guilt and shame come from, feeling like we are not contributing effectively to the group. And over the last 50, 70 years of Western culture especially, we've gotten extremely individualized. And we think about what am I going to achieve instead of thinking about what am I contributing to my community? In what ways am I being useful? How can I look out for other people in my community? And that's where we get that kind of social glue. And that's a huge part of well-being.
Yeah, but I mean, what you're doing there is taking having to take a long, hard look at yourself in the mirror and, spoiler alert, and stripping away the ego. Because you strip away the ego and go, I'm not happy because the world doesn't happen like I want it to. So therefore, I'm not happy. And I'm going to go on social media and have a bleeding great argument with that person because I don't believe in them, rather than going, this stuff really isn't important. And so, well, you know, as the saying goes, you know, physician heal thyself. You've got to really sort of get rid of the ego, and that is perhaps one of the one of the keys, and it's one of the hardest things to do. You don't just, you know, flick a switch and your ego is gone.
Absolutely. There's a line that I really like, I think from a blog that I used to read a long, long time ago called Don't Be a Knob in Palestine or something of that sort, which basically was looking at all these people who came to Palestine to sort of raise awareness, and they'd set up their own charity instead of joining one of the charities there. And the line is something like, join the movement, don't try to be the movement. And I think that does speak to a lot of the themes you just raised about looking at the ways that other people are already getting a lot out of life, contributing, and how can you fit into that, as opposed to making it all about yourself. Sometimes it will be something that you really need to do that's specific to you, but I think for most of us, we can look out at the world and join something that already exists.
So, how would we go about it, Mark? I mean, like I said, I'm sitting, looking out over the over towards the shimmering Mediterranean, can see Gibraltar if I stand on the desk. So life is pretty good, but so on a surface, it is peaches and cream. But I mean, how do we go getting that inner happiness, and I suppose it's contentment, isn't it? It's not just happiness as in I've got a big smile on my face and I'm whistling zibbity doo dah, but it is the feeling of peace and contentment we're after as a baseline.
Yeah, I think it is a feeling of peace and contentment, but I'd also add fulfillment there, and I'd also add purpose. And sometimes when we talk about purpose or significance, we think in very grand terms. We think about, like, I'm part of the civil rights movement or something. It really doesn't need to be that grand. It can be just about how you contribute to your immediate interpersonal networks. So when you're talking about how to go about it, the first thought that I had was about a section in the book called On the Need for Priests. And I'm not talking about religious priests or preaching on the street corner. I'm talking more about recognizing that you're embedded in a social network and you know the people in that network better than people outside the network, like their therapists or their doctors or whatever. And you can think of ways that they can be beneficial to each other. So I think one of the main ways to restore community, to rebuild social bonds, is just for us to think about the ways we can put our friends together.
Ah, friends. Now, friends, community, because you can have thousands of friends. Again, yeah. Social media, but it's cultivating real friends, isn't it? It's cultivating the friends that will stick to you when the proverbial hits the heating element.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that is difficult, but a lot of it is just about exposure and familiarity and spending time together. I have plenty of friends from my time at university who I don't think when I initially met them, I thought they were a person worth investing time in. But because we lived together at a dormitory, we played football together, we went to classes together. Gradually, we got to know each other and we started to share a lot of things, just shared experiences, shared values, shared attitudes to things. And on that basis, the friendship grows. I think this notion of familiarity and connecting with people just because they're in the same space as you is really important. And it's very distinct from, say, just connecting on Reddit to people who share your interest in zero waste culture or Labour Party politics or whatever it might be.
The other thing is, and the more discerning listener may have gathered from your accent, Mark, that you're not actually from London and you're from Oz. And that is a culture that is outdoor, is known for cutting away the BS and generally having the sort of lifestyle that makes you intrinsically healthy and happy. I'm living in southern Spain. Trust me, the Spanish know how to live. So therefore, you know, I've just got back from a fantastic wedding over the weekend and it put my faith in humankind right back up to 11. Are there certain cultures you think there are predisposed to happiness more than so, say, if you're living in, you know, living in and apologies, you know, living in rainy West Ham, for example?
You're pushing me here. I have to say, since coming to the UK, I do feel like British culture sometimes is its own worst enemy. There's a kind of meanness here, I think, particularly to the government, and this kind of really bad hangover from Protestantism, where there's still this attitude, not just that you should be working, but that like you should be drudging, and that if you're not drudging, you're a loser, which seems kind of wrong to me. Like it's the drudging that's not good, and we should instead be looking for more kind of inspiring and nice ways of engaging in life. So I do think there are some cultures that are not particularly well suited to happiness, and I do think Australia is one that's very compatible with happiness for some of the reasons that you mentioned. So we're very irreverent. We don't take things too seriously, especially ourselves. So there's not that much ego. We do tend to socialize a lot outdoors, especially like the Spanish. We do tend to exercise a lot, although that's very bifurcated. So half of Australian culture is morbidly obese. Half of Australian culture is like only cares about the body and is obsessed with rocking out their six packs at the beach. And I think one of the most important things in Australia is this kind of egalitarianism that we have, that no matter, it's never about really distinguishing yourself from other people. There's a strong sense of solidarity and that we all want to recognize each other rather than separate from everybody else.
We've got Protestant work ethic on the one hand and Catholic guilt on the other. So we're on a hiding.
Yeah.
You're on a hiding to nothing from that. I mean, what are you hoping, Mark, that people are gonna learn and perhaps consider with Beyond Happy?
The two main things for me, I guess, is that well-being is something that we do together. You're going to need to figure out who you are before you can effectively do well-being with other people. So the start of the book is very individualistic, but we move quickly into the communitarian aspect. And I think there's a lot of insights into how we can do that better and how we can recover many of the things that we've lost about how we do well-being together. And the second thing that I hope people get is that well-being and happiness really lies in being a values-driven person. I think a lot of the time at the moment, because of the pressures of modern life, like the housing market where I am and the housing market where you are quite taxing. But because of these things, we tend to get very caught up in our own stresses and very caught up in our material needs. And I don't think we think enough about what sort of narrative we're crafting around our life, what sort of values we're pursuing, what sort of world we're trying to create. And I think in those kind of more substantive endeavors is where a lot of your well-being and happiness is going to be found.
The book is called Beyond Happy. It's by Mark Fabian. It's been to today. Mark, if people want to find you online, where's the best place to go and find you and share the happiness?
Well, you can really pick your poison. If you want my kind of more erudite to academic takes, you can find me on Blue Sky. If you want me just talking about the book and trying to be funny, then I'll be on TikTok. If you want me to be backslapping, I'll be on LinkedIn. And then I also post a lot of my blogging stuff on Substack and cross-post it on Instagram. So whatever you want, whatever you want.
I just like the idea of backslapping on LinkedIn. I've never heard it called that before, but I shall refer to it as always. Listeners, you can also order the book. Go to the virtual bookstore. You'll see the front cover of Beyond Happy, and you can order it direct from there. The book is called Beyond Happy. It's by Mark Fabian, who is speaking today. Mark, thank you so much for your time today.
So enjoyable. I really, yeah, thanks for having me.
That's what you want.